This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Can you believe it, Mike? It is sultry out there, ain't it?
Yeah, and thank you for air conditioning in this little place.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it's probably only 80 in here, but it feels good.
Oh, God. I only been out one time around noon. I came back in.
Yeah. Don't go back out.
I haven't been out. 97, it says here.
Yeah, you know, your machine is wrong. It's 99 anyway. It's supposed to be 100 or something tomorrow and the next day or something like that?
Yeah, 100 tomorrow, and I believe it said 101 the following day.
Oh, great. I am so enthused, yes. Thank you so much.
You may have to take a couple of days off.
I may have to take a year off. I don't know. anyway, welcome to the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. It's great to be here, and it's a talk show about gardens and landscaping and how to water, how to do this and that and the next thing, and you have a question, you may call at 673-4464 and ask the question. I'll give you an answer, and we'll go from there and see if it solves your problem. But before we start into all of that, I wanted to share a little bit of a story.
Okay.
And the story has to do with how I got here in behind this microphone. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting because this is my 18th year doing this. It's amazing.
I started in
2003. So anyway, I had just gotten done with my term as a county commissioner, and it was January, and my wife and I were going to Eugene to get some plants or something like that. But we stopped in at Casey's restaurant for breakfast, walked in there, and Pat Markham was sitting there having breakfast. And he says, "Hi, Mike." I says, "Hi, Pat. How you doing? Blah, blah, blah." And I says, "You know what? You ought to have a garden show on your radio station. You got every other kind of show, but you don't have a garden show." And he says, "Well, write me a proposal." I said, "Oh, okay." And I thought, okay.
There's a challenge.
Yeah, there's a challenge. You know, I shouldn't open my big mouth. And anyway, a couple, 3 days went by, and I hadn't written any proposal. I kind of spaced it out.
Yeah.
I got a phone call one morning, and he says, "Hi, this is Pat. You got my proposal ready?" I says, "Yeah, I'll have it there at 3 o'clock, okay?" And he says, "Okay, thanks." And he hung up, and I thought, how in the world do I write a proposal for a garden show on the radio? And so I kind of fumbled around and wrote a page of things that I could talk about, blah, 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 blah. Went and came in about 3 o'clock, and I says, "Here it is." And he goes, and he read it real quickly, and he says, "Okay, how about, I don't know, back in those days, how about Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock? I says, "Yeah, sure." He says, "Okay, see you Thursday." And I went, "Oh, my gosh, what am I going to do now?" Why did I do that? And anyway, that's how I became a radio guy.
Yeah, it's been going on since.
Yeah, and, you know, and when I started this gardening show, I had no experience, of course, in radio talk show work, but my goal was to give folks easy to understand and practical information on landscaping, on gardening, or how to plant, or when to plant, and soil types, and proper watering, fertilizing, pruning, all the stuff that makes your yard healthy and beautiful, and that kind of thing. And another goal was to take questions from callers and give practical answers to correct the problem they might have. And that's worked out really well. And most of the questions are good, and I hope they have solved problems when people have called in and said, "Hey, my petunias are doing this, or my oak tree is doing that." And I ask them a couple of questions about, you know, where it is, what kind of soil it is, how they're watering, if they're watering, you know, those kinds of things, and try to get a feel for what they're experiencing at their home, and then give them some basic helpful suggestions that they might explore to improve whatever is going haywire. So hopefully that's been successful, and, you know, people still call, so I guess that's good. And you know, so I just want to thank all my listeners out there for your support, and you've made me a better landscaper and a better nursery guy, because I've had to do a lot of research, additional research about topics that I hadn't been too involved in, just to make sure that I had a full quiver when I walked in here. You know, I'm always looking for something new to talk about and see and try to say, well, have you considered this or considered that, blah, blah, blah. And so what is leading into this week's episode here, but it's about water. And since we're experiencing
the lack of,
and I just read the headline on the news review saying Sutherland water restrictions, mm-hmm. and you can't water your lawn, and you can't water
wash
your shrubs or wash your car. And I'm thinking, whoa, that's a pretty substantial hit on the entire city.
I got one of those little notices over there.
You got a notice in the mail?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So dirty cars are okay, but dead lawns are not, or mm-hmm. dead shrubs. That's not okay, because that's, you know, living things and all that. But in the last week, and I don't know how this will help us, but I just want to throw out these ideas for people to think about them and think about what's available out there if we really put our minds to how do we correct these problems and these issues that we seem to be facing. And in the last week, I read an interesting article on water production and rain. And I don't understand all that I read, but I read it a couple of times, but I'll try to boil this info down to give you the general idea. And the first one comes from the Warm Springs Venture Corporation, which is over in Warm Springs, which is north of Bend, the Indian Reservation. And this fellow over there, I didn't write his name down, I can't remember it, but this fellow over there makes pure drinking water from hydro panels. Now, it looks like a sun panel or one of those kinds of things, but he calls it a hydro panel. And this information comes from the Capital Press, which is an agricultural newspaper. It's a weekly that I get, and it has all kinds of these different kinds of articles. But the hydro panel looks like a solar panel, but they produce pure, clean drinking water. Pure, clean drinking water.
Wow.
And the panels are producing water from the air and the sunlight. Now, I don't know how that works, but that's what the article stated.
Huh.
The moisture or the dew or anything like that, I guess, settles on these panels, and the sunlight somehow creates water, but they have a... And it drains into a container, and a panel will produce 160 gallons of water, pure, clean drinking water, mm-hmm. with no chemicals, nothing added to it, for drinking for the Warm Springs tribe and the people who live on the reservation.
Hmm.
Because, it's a dry, hot
it's
country.
It's a desert, basically.
Yeah, it's desert, and I don't know if the fires have gotten up through there, the big one over there. But I thought, wow, this guy's a genius. I don't know how they did that, but this has a really great impact on the folks who live in Warm Springs, and this area, like I say, is very dry, with lots of sun, and these panels use solar power to extract water vapor from the air and condense it into a liquid.
That's amazing.
Totally amazing. But there was no detailed information or scientific details about how this happened.
Well, it came from a garden hose.
Yeah, right. But it makes this beautiful water, and the water is like similar to distilled water, and the panels do not need an external source of power. They don't need any power to do this. And 200 panels, oh, here it is, 200 panels produce 160 gallons of water per day.
On a continually basis?
Yeah, per day, 200 panels, 160 gallons of pure water. And
think that's enough to live on.
Well, yeah, for one or two families if they were short. But here's the cool thing. Since this is working so well, the tribe plans on installing 300 more units this year, and they're going to increase the that'll increase the capacity of water to 720 gallons a day. And these panels cost about $2,000 each, but they didn't say where they get them or who manufactures them or anything
Probably
like that.
Probably China.
Yeah, no, gosh, I hope not. But with free water from the sun, it's a good deal. You know, I mean, hey, it's a great deal. And the guy ought to get the Nobel Prize or something for, I don't know if he invented it, but because it didn't say so in the article. But to put something like this together to where, and it's not very cloudy over in that country at all. So it's not a cloud thing. It's just the moisture from the atmosphere hitting these panels and somehow
turning to water
in pure water. No chemicals, no additives, no chlorine, nothing like that. And
body wouldn't know how to react.
No. And at this point, there are 35 families with panels. And there's more on the way, and there are a dozen community members that are trained to install and maintain these units, and these people are some smart people. I don't know what their backgrounds are, but they're ingenious, and they're a real service to their community.
Absolutely.
And as far as I'm concerned, instead of the government throwing away money on all the crud that it throws away money on, this is the kind of thing that the government needs to give money to, so they can produce good water, and just not in Warm Springs, but any desert area, or even here in southern Oregon. I mean, we could probably produce more because we do get occasional clouds once in a while, you know.
Oh, even in California, they always have a shortage.
I know. And here's another one about water. and it just struck me about these water issues simply because we're, you know, the South Umpqua, you know, there's a lot of rocks in there and there's a little bit of water. And my wells and at the nursery are way down, and we have to conserve every day to water our material.
Yeah.
And and my spring at home, I've got water, but we're very, very careful and frugal. We don't waste it at all. We don't wash our cars at home, trust me. But the other article I was reading was about the United Arab Emirates.
That's the one I was remembering from last week.
Yeah. And it's one of the, you know, most arid countries on Earth.
Can we take a break first?
Yeah, we can take a break, and we'll get back
to
this.
That.
Yes.
Part two coming up. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show and more water on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, we're back.
Yeah, we're back. And I've got another water story that I wanted to share with you all. And this is, like I said, from the United Arab Emirates. That's in the desert sand with no vegetation, the UAE. It's the most arid country on Earth. But now it's creating its own rain using drones that fly into clouds and unleash electrical charges into these clouds. And the rain is formed using drone technology that gives clouds an electrical shock that produces rain.
Kind of wakes them up or whatever.
Right. And it's not just a little shower, but it's a monsoon-like rain.
Wow.
Yeah.
And actually, it's going to do some good.
Yes, and it rains so hard that the article said that the drivers struggle to keep their cars on the road.
Oh, my gosh.
And this isn't a country that averages 3 inches of rain a year normally. 3 inches. And it's in the top 10 of the driest countries on Earth. And what this is basically cloud seeding with electrical charges, and this helps the water droplets to merge and stick together to form raindrops. Hmm. So all this stuff is, I guess, spread out in the cloud, mm-hmm. and these electrical charges, some, again, smart person or persons, said, hey, let's try this with a drone, you know? Let's go and
let's get up
see
there.
If we can make some rain here. Well, the UAE produces water from desalinization plants.
Right.
But 4 days of heavy rain by cloud seeding was the equivalent to a 9-year output of a single desalination plant.
Wow.
Did you get that?
I did.
Yeah. I mean, 4 days of heavy rain
right.
equal to a 9-year output from one of their plants.
Why, we should use it over here.
Oh, yeah, we could. So why aren't we doing it? Now,
I asked
how much these drones cost. $15 million. One of these drones,
yeah.
But they're a big machine. They're not just mm-hmm. one of these little toy things you see. I mean, they're high-class technology kind
right,
of stuff.
Right, but they would pay for it.
Oh, yeah, in about 2 days.
Yeah.
You get a couple of monsoons in the Arab world, and pretty soon they'll be growing corn, you know, and that kind of thing.
Relieve us for a while.
Yeah, exactly. These are huge sources of water that are available to us mm-hmm. and could be tapped. And I don't know what's keeping the U.S. from doing some of this, that, you know, that we have this drought here in the West, California, Washington, mm-hmm. Oregon, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, all those places. And those places have clouds, but there's moisture trapped in those clouds. Well, shoot, if they could zap it with one of these drones and have monsoon-like rains in the middle of July and August, that would be a good deal.
They'd be set up.
They would be set up. And Sutherland, for instance, has, with its water restrictions because the dam is so low on water.
Yeah,
You know, Cooper Creek, which is probably the main water source for the city of Sutherland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there might be others, but I don't know of them. And, you know, a couple of good rains, guess what? That puppy's full, and you're not restricted anymore from the use of your water. So that's where money...
Seems like a win-win.
Absolutely. Absolutely a win-win. I mean, it would revive economies, agriculture, refresh streams, lakes, watersheds, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And there wouldn't be so many trees dying in our woods. And everywhere, it seems like I see new dead Douglas fir
yep.
almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I go out Highway 42 and I'm looking up in the hills and I go, geez, you know, there's five of those up there. And I thought there was only two, but mm-hmm. now there's five that are totally brown and the needles are dropping. Man, if we could zap some clouds with these drones, for goodness sakes.
It'd be a miracle.
Yeah, we would have all the water we want. And it depends on the quality of clouds. Cloud seeding can increase the amount of rain by up to 70%.
Wow.
Yeah. Of course, we don't need it from November to March, but
no.
but it wouldn't hurt in June, July, and August,
August
you
yeah.
know, and give us a break there. But, gosh. So the the United Arab Republics is looking to build dams to keep the water so they can use it. So here they are building dams while we're tearing ones out because we want to save some fish, you know. I think people are more important than fish. How's that? I hope I get a call on that one. But, you know, and they already have over there in their country, small country, they have 130 dams with a storage capacity of about 120 million cubic meters,
jeez.
Which is 4 billion cubic feet of water storage.
Boy, they're getting ready.
Yeah, they are. And they're building more dams. And, you know, and their quote was, we don't want to waste a drop of water. And I think the USA model, of course, is to tear down dams. But mm-hmm. I don't think that's wisdom, and I don't think that's wise. And without water, those farmers in the Klamath region and all through, you know, eastern mm-hmm. Oregon,
sure.
I mean, they're cut off. They have no water. So you can watch what food prices are going to be this fall and clear into next spring, and hopefully we'll have our normal rainfall. Now, there are some scientists that I read that said we're going to have this big La Nina, which will bring a lot of water and rain and snow
yeah.
this winter. Well, I hope they're correct for a change. I hope they really got their act together on all this. But anyway, I just wanted to share that info, especially after I saw the headline of the of today's news review that says, hey, Sutherland has water restrictions. Mm-hmm. How long is it before Winston, Roseburg, and all these other communities that rely on stored water will be facing some of the same things? And what's that going to do to our economy, our job market, on our farming, you know, all those kinds of things? We got Cruz out here. We got Brosai Farms out here. Of course, they're already producing and selling stuff, but it is still mid-season, and they can be productive until end of September. Even into October. But we need to make sure that they have sufficient water that they can irrigate their crops.
Do their job.
Yeah. So, and okay, I'll get on to the gardening stuff now. So if you have a call, 673-4464. You know, many shrubs and trees, you know, are showing stress. I've talked about that now for a couple of weeks because of so many hot days in a row. And the leaves, of course, on a lot of deciduous shrubs and trees are fading color-wise and losing vitality because of the hot sun. I mean, day after day after day after day, even though you might be irrigating it, even though the root system is alive, the leaves are paper thin, for crying out loud. Mm. And with that sun beating on them relentlessly, without a break, it just wastes the leaves. The trees, I don't believe
it would waste me if it was beating on me.
Well, why don't you go out and lay in the parking lot? You'll see what it's like in about 5 minutes.
Come out and revive me.
Yeah, we'll just scrape you off. Don't worry. But you know, the root systems on these trees are still alive, and even though the leaves will kind of curl up and maybe fall off prematurely, and we've had premature falls in the past, but it didn't happen till like, you know, September, but they still will form, since the root systems are alive, they'll still form buds for next year. They may not be as many buds, but they'll still form buds because they shut down their system and say, well, we got to survive to next year, so this is what we do. We shed the leaves, get rid of the leaves, so there's not a lot of energy going to destroyed leaves, so that energy stays within the tree or within the shrub and goes through their waiting period until next spring arrives. So you don't have to panic, even though they're looking bad and looking like they're dead. They're probably really not. There may be some that are dead, but not usually. But in the, you know, a few hot days, you know, a couple of 3 days that we have.
That's kind of normal. And
that's normal. But after a while, you know, they just go into that, like I say, the premature fall. We can't take this heat. We're going to fold our tent and go to sleep, you know. And so they go into that pattern. And this is even occurring on our native oaks and maples as well, that you see all around. I mean, I've got maples, my big maples, the big leaf maples. Yeah, they're looking a little bruised. I mean, they're not as lush. They're not as green. They're losing the color. And some of them are curling up and turning brown, some of the leaves. Not all, the whole tree, but some of them. But it's progressive. It's happening and happening. So it's not something that you need to panic about, but just keep, like I say, keep the root systems wet. Not soaking wet, but wet. Mm-hmm. And they will come back next spring, and you can also see that it's not all trees and shrubs. You know, if you have some in afternoon shade, you got some shrubs in afternoon shade in your yard, you know, they're in much better shape because they're not experiencing that hot sunlight just, you know, beaming on them from, you know, minute it comes up to the minute it goes down. So so you want to continue to water those a little more than normal. You know, just keep those root systems alive. That's the key to it. And as the days get shorter, I've seen morning temps, especially at my place, decline into the 40s. You know, 43, 42 degrees on my front porch, because I leave pretty early. I'm leaving usually at 5 in the morning, you know, because I got to do the early water at the nursery. So I try to get it done before any heat of the day comes on so that they can absorb it and keep it there. Yeah. One morning it was 43 and it felt cold. And I thought, whoa, man, what is it, 20? No, it was 43, man.
Kind of felt good, though.
Yeah, it did. It did. I got my truck turned on the heater, for crying out loud. But I see a lot of lawns showing stress signs. That's okay. Remember, deep soaking is going to keep them alive. And as soon as the heat breaks, they'll revive and grow again. Lawns kind of turn brown when that happens. But one way to keep them greener, and I've only said this 200 times, is not to mow the lawns too short.
Darn.
Don't scalp them. Let them be shaggy. The shaggier they are, the greener they are, the more healthy they are. They may not be looking like the ninth hole at the country club, but hey, it's okay. And when you mow too short, you know, of course, the lawn turns brown, and you leave it a little bit long, and it'll stay green or greener. Maybe not totally super green like, April, but it will be greener. Do we have a break?
We do, but I was going to bring you up to date on that vine I was telling you about outside.
Oh, yeah, the vine.
And I put vinegar on it.
Oh, yeah?
Didn't bother it a bit.
It didn't?
No, so I put bleach on it.
Yeah?
And I came out again the next morning, and there it had little new buds coming up.
After straight bleach.
I even get down there. And
you're kidding.
Right. So I just pulled it up with my hand.
Well, you should have taken cuttings off it. We got an indestructible plant.
The vine from hell. We'll be back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, we do have our fun between breaks, don't we?
Yeah, good thing you all don't hear it, I'll tell you that.
Yes, it is. Neither one of us would be here.
Yeah, I know. I'd get fired from my unpaid job.
Well, what's up next?
Well, we're talking about drought, we're talking about water, we're talking about temperature and how to keep things alive and how to create rain out of drones that shoot crystals into clouds, you know, that kind of thing, which is kind of interesting.
It's not science fiction anymore.
No, it's the real deal, and they're really doing it. So, you know, and what's kind of interesting is that if you, like I said, I get the Capital Press, which is kind of an agricultural paper, talks about everything agriculture, you know, from strikes to growing prunes, you know, mm-hmm. and everything in between. And it has these kinds of articles in that, and they're very interesting. And it has a, you know, all of this stuff has a long-term effect on us because of the drought situations and the Klamath Basin that grows a lot of our food, et cetera. When those farmers don't have enough water to irrigate their crops and their crops are that they do harvest are somewhat skimpy, that which is left and that which is saleable, whether they're peas or potatoes, there's a premium price on those kinds of things. And I think a few weeks ago I talked about having your own garden and how important that was. Well, I can't stress that enough. For if you don't have one now, make sure you make plans for next year in case this kind of thing perpetuates itself over time, and you'll be able to at least grow some of your own food. And actually, if my garden wasn't full, even though it's July, you could still plant some tomatoes or peppers or something, and they'd be ready by September or at the latest October. So you would have something to eat, even if the tomatoes at Safeway were $10 a piece. You know, you'd have some that were a lot less expensive. But anyway, temperatures and in heat and all that kind of stuff. No, it's not good. It really takes a toll on people, on vegetation, etc. And I can see some of these new homes that are newly constructed that have bare ground all the way around them. They haven't been landscaped at all. And And if I were able to talk to the new homeowner or even the contractor that built them, I'd say, hey, you know, first thing you do is plant a couple of shade trees out there for the future, because otherwise it's going to be hotter than snot in that house for a long time. But the more shade you have around your place and the more greenery you have around your place, it brings the overall temperature down a few degrees to where it's even livable. But the temptation that some folks have, and it's understandable, is to plant a shade tree when it's this hot, we've got to get some shade in here. So they go to a nursery and get a nice shade tree, and it's 99 degrees, and they drive it home in their pickup and maybe don't set it in the shade to recoup for a while and water it because of the ride, and then they try to dig in this dry hard pan ground that that might be their front yard, and they try to plant it, and maybe they miss a step or two because they've never done it before and wonder why the tree struggles or why the tree didn't make it at all. And my best advice to that is, make sure you get good instructions from the place that you buy them. Make sure that whoever sells it to you gives you all the scoop on what kind of soil it needs, what kind of watering, what kind of fertilization, all that kind of stuff. The size of the planting hole is very important. You just can't dig a hole the same size as the pot and just kind of wedge the tree in. It just won't work. But unless you have a great deal of experience planting trees, and wait until it cools off a little bit, like maybe after Labor Day or something like that, because surely by Labor Day the temperatures are not going to be in the hundreds. At least I'm praying they won't.
Know. It's Oregon.
I know it's Oregon. But if you wait until it cools off, or maybe we could have a super rain event if we get one of those drones to shoot some crystals into the clouds.
But right over the fire.
Yeah, right over the fire. And they had rain. The fire up there, they had rain the other night.
Did they?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. In fact, I had a little. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I thought, what in the world is going on? What's that sound? And I went to my bedroom door, opened it up. It was raining.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't last very long, but it was raining. I thought, whoa!
Was that this morning?
No, yesterday morning.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
I noticed a few drops on my car.
Yeah, and somebody else told me that it had rained at their place last night, but I didn't get any last night, so I don't know what's going on.
It's moving.
Yeah. But anyway, after Labor Day, it's good because we get cooler nights and not as hot days. And who knows, we might have a super rain event by then. It would even be better. But as we get close to September, you can shop around and see what kind of trees are available, what kind of trees would do well for your yard. Depends on the size of your yard, depends on the space that you have. And you can also determine where you want the shade. You're at home and it's a bare lot and the sun is setting in the west. Well, we're going to plant one on the west and then on the south of the house, provided you've got the room, or in the southwest quadrant. Depends. That will give you shade in the long run. And normally the south and west parts of your yard are the best for the shade trees if you're looking for coolness in the long run. And if you want more than one tree, make sure that you space them at least 20 to 25 feet apart and not too close to your home. You don't want leaves falling in the gutter someday and screwing up your gutter system and plugging that up and doing damage to your roof or anything like that. So make sure you give them plenty of space. Make sure that they're not going to be tangled all together. It's kind of funny. I was at a client's house yesterday, and they have gone crazy on planting trees. I mean, they got fruit trees, and they got this, and they got that. And the thing I noticed right off the bat, they were all too close.
Uh-oh.
And I talked to them about it a little bit, and I said, you know, the reason this is not doing what it's supposed to be doing is, you know, it's battling out for life against this other tree that's 5 feet away. And we talked about pruning this winter and that kind of thing. So to give them a little more space and open them up so that they can produce the fruit, and because most of them are fruit trees.
And they haven't got any fruit on them now.
Well, I got three plums and a peach.
Oh,
Okay. That was what was left on our trees, and they gave them to me. I said, okay, good. This is
were
good.
They?
Well, I put them in the icebox.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want to mess them up. They were riding around in my truck. And I thought, if they're riding around in my truck more than a day, they'll get smashed.
And bruised and all that.
But anyway, well, you can shop around for trees. Your selection may not be real great this time of year, but at least you can see what's out there, and you can talk to the people at the different nurseries or places that you normally shop, and they can tell you, hey, this tree is going to grow 35 feet or 50, 60 feet, or and it's going to spread this much, and this is what will happen, and this is what it'll look like in the spring, this is how much it'll grow, etc., if it's taken care of, and it's fertilized and watered properly, and on and on and on. And that's the kind of knowledge you want to have. You want to have that so that a good tree is going to cost you $60 to $80. You know, something that's 8, 10 feet tall with a good trunk and grows fast. You look for fast-growing ones if you're looking for shade. But again, not too close to the house. And but like I say, if you want more than one tree, which is fine, you got to space them at least 20 feet apart. You don't want to get them too close, because in time, anything that's closer than that, anything that's closer than 20 feet, the branches from each tree will be intermingled with one another. And not that it's going to kill it, but it's kind of a, you know, it's wasted, I don't know, wasted space or something. If you put them a little bit further apart, maybe you can have three trees out there that will in time shade your whole front yard and keep your house cool, keep your yard cool, and keep your air conditioning bill somewhat modified in the summertime. So that's the thing. And when planting shade trees, a long-term vision of ultimate size needs to be taken into account. In other words, when you're asking questions, say, well, how big is this tree going to get? Well, under normal circumstances, it'll get, you know, 40 feet tall, and 40 feet, the canopy will be 40 feet wide from side to side. And when you see your yard, maybe your front yard is smaller, and you have a big backyard but a small front yard, you have to take that into consideration. Maybe I don't want a tree that's going to be 40 feet tall or 40 feet wide in 20 years, and so you might want something smaller. Any type of tree, and there's so many of them that only grow, you know, 20, 25 feet. Fruit trees, for instance. Fruit trees will provide some shade, some coolness, not like a maple, not like an oak or something like that, or an aspen, but and any shade will help cool your property. Any shade.
Any is better than none.
Exactly. And, you know, and I've spoken in the past about what green grass does. It actually cuts the temperature about 5 degrees in your home yard. Mm-hmm. You know, it actually is cooler when you have a nice green lawn. But the long-term vision is, okay, what do I want that to look like? Do I want just one tree, or do I want three? And if I have, and if I want three, do I have enough space that I can space these trees out so that they'll all be good, with good growth? There won't be a battle for space.
Compatible.
Compatible, exactly. And won't be overwhelming for my yard.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, or you can't answer those questions, you know, call somebody like myself and for a consultation, and we can tell you specifically, you know, given the space you have, given the soil you have, this would be the best kind of tree to plant for your best long-term result. And that's the kind of thing you need to envision. Now, maple trees grow fast, and they will give you ultimate shade. Some of them grow faster than others. The fastest growing maples can grow like 4 feet a year easily.
Jeez.
Yeah, I've got a silver maple will grow. I've seen them grow 5 and 6 feet a year once they're established. They don't do that the first year, but after about on the third year, when the root system is developed and they're you've taken care of them, and they on a good year they can grow 5 feet.
Good heavens.
And there's one that's called Autumn Fantasy, which is a cross between a silver maple and a red maple. Mm-hmm. And it's not only beautiful in the fall, but it grows very fast. It's got the best of both. the genetic code of each of those trees.
Do the leaves kind of turn red?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very, very on the autumn fantasy, they're very, very red.
Yeah.
Red to red burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really attractive.
I think that's the tree that was out in front of Mom and Ed's front yard every year. I mean, it's huge now.
But, oh, yeah.
But when it was all red, it would reflect in the windows inside the house.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, now, like our normal big leaf maple that's wild and grows everywhere around here, they turn a bright yellow, like the color of this paper.
Oh, okay.
So when you see them in the fall, you know, and they've got the big leaf. It's called a big leaf maple because the leaves are so big.
Yeah.
But they're a great shade tree. But they're very common, and people don't like common. They want something with some orange or something. But Autumn Fantasy is a great one, Red Sunset, and then October Glory is another. October Glory has orange and red all through the leaves in the fall. Mm. And it's not as fast as the first one that I, the Autumn Fantasy. It's not as fast, but, you know, it'll grow 3 feet a year for you.
Nice.
And you figure in, you know, 10 years, you got a 30-foot tree.
Yeah, this one. Yeah, I drove by the other day, and this thing is huge now. Well, we got to take a break.
You got a break? Okay. We'll be back.
I'm surprised Dad didn't chop it down because he hated the leaves.
Weren't blowers invented back then?
He never used them.
Oh,
anyway, we'll be back with more Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, hello again. We're back.
We're back, and we got, what, a couple minutes or so?
Yeah, about five.
About five? Okay, I'll see if I can keep going for five. We haven't had a call today, so I'm surprised. I mean, everybody's probably swimming in their swimming pool or at the lake or at the river or if there's any water in the river.
Sweltering by an electric fan.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been talking about water things. I've been talking about shade. I've been talking about survival in the summer. And if you do have a call, I got 5 minutes, 673-4464. And if you have any comments about the remarks that I've been making, that's cool for me. I can handle any of that. But by planting in the fall, like after Labor Day, we'll say that's the beginning of fall, even though that's not the first day of fall. But at least the nights are cooler.
Mm-hmm.
The days are cooler. And so there's less stress on trees and shrubs when you plant them after a hot summer. When you plant them in the heat of the summer, it takes a little more work and finesse to keep them alive and healthy and going.
We got a phone call.
All right. A phone call.
Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Yes. Might be one reason you're not getting a lot of calls. It's kind of hard to get your number, but you finally gave it to me there. My question, I planted two young peach trees this spring. They were about 5 feet tall when I planted them. I got them at a local nursery in Roseburg. One of them said it's the most leaf curl resistant, and the other's the second most. Anyway, they were bare root. I planted them and did, I think, everything I was supposed to do. And they grew very nicely. They were very healthy. And just in the last week, one of them, half of the leaves turned yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, I don't know why, about half of its leaves got great big red blotches. So their leaves were more red than green.
Huh.
And it's not all the leaves, but it's about 50% of the leaves, and obviously they don't look so healthy anymore.
Well, that the one with the red could be peach leaf curl, but also it's been, and I've repeated this a lot, it's been an awfully hot summer, day after day after day after day, and there's some leaf damage that occurs from the incessant sunshine. I wouldn't panic. I think they'll probably be okay. Do you water them much or at all?
I've got them on an automatic waterer that it's a little more than a drip system, but they get 40 minutes of water every other day.
Okay, that's too much, okay? You could do that twice a week, and it'd be more than ample.
Okay.
And that will have a tendency to, you know, you'll see it in the leaf damage and curling or browning or yellowing, and the leaf kind of folding, not straight out, but kind of, you know, weeping, if you will. And
right.
and I would suggest to stick your finger down there 6 inches or so, dig around in the soil around the tree, and actually feel. And if it's very, very wet, you'll know that you're watering too much. And it's struggling to stay alive. But if you go down 6 inches or so and it's dry, that's not the case. But continue on the peach leaf curl spraying. That's very, very important, of course, when it's dormant. And you might have to spray at least twice in the winter. And sometimes some folks say 3 times to combat the peach leaf curl.
Okay. Now, you said go down 6 inches and it's the ground should feel dry?
No. You want to feel the ground and you want to see if it is dry 6 inches down, then there's not enough water penetration with what you're doing. But if you go down 6 inches, it's very, very wet, you can knock off the watering to twice a week.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And try it out and call me back, see if that works, and tell me if it was damp. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. All right. Don't have a whole lot of time left. We like 20 seconds.
20 seconds? Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today. I certainly did. I enjoy doing this all the time because it forces me to do more research about different kinds of things all the time and enlarges my plant vocabulary, if you will. And when people call, it's good. And by the way, the number is 673-4464, and I thought I said it twice on this show, but
I think you did, but
that's okay.
It's all right.
All right, thanks for listening.
Catch you next week.
Yes, sir.